All right, this is my year in review for 2025. We're going to look back at 12 months in detail. I actually went through the trouble of writing down all of the 12 months, all the twists and turns. Lots of Trump and MAGA, of course, because this is the American edition of my year in review. And I'm going to try to be as detailed as possible. I've done my homework. Before we get going, though, speaking of homework, I have a brand new book out, The Foundations of Shakespeare. It's a really gorgeous production, this. I'm excited about it. You know, it can almost go next to my my folio books on the shelf. What's fantastic about this is that they've not only done a brilliant production on the cover and so on, but inside they've produced all sorts of custom-made graphics, and you know, they employed an artist to put together, you know, the various. I'm explaining how the feudalism and bastard feudalism and the great chain of being, and you know, there's a lot of history and maps and all sorts of things where I'm explaining necessary context to understand Shakespeare. And I mean, the way they put these maps together. And the way this whole production looks, I have to say, so I've been flabbergasted by what a good job the publisher Academic Imprint has done on this. If you did, or if you own the Foundations of Shakespeare course, all you have to do is send the publisher a receipt and they will sell it to you for half price if you own the course. Speaking of which, you can pick up courses 25% off all this month because it's the January sales. And that only means one thing. It's promo code SureJan.
Sure.
SureJan.
Can you command a comma like Joseph Conrad?
Sure, sure.
SureJan.
Are you magnificent in your mastery of marginalism like Murray Rothbard?
Sure, sure.
SureJan.
Are you legendary in your logical leveling of lamentable loquacity?
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
Come on down to the January sale at the Academic Agency. Promo code SureJan for 25% off. All this January, I got more courses than the Queen had horses.
Sure, Jan.
I got better rates than Andrew Tate's had mates.
Sure, Jan.
I got better deals than Lizzo's had meals.
Sure.
Sure, Jan.
All right, so let's get on with the year in review. We're going to do it month by month. I'm going to start way back in January. In fact, before we even get to January, that's before Trump was inaugurated, one bit of news that I took really badly, and this was back late last year, was that Matt Gaetz was not confirmed. And remember, he was replaced with this character, Sam Bondi. And I knew from that moment that we were in for the bad MAGA. Right, this was not the MAGA that we wanted. And as soon as Gaetz was out, I knew something was up. So I was kind of preparing myself for the worst. That said, in the early part of the year, January, February, March sort of time, I still had some excitement for Trump and MAGA. Like, you know, maybe Trump has learned from the first time around. This time he was prepared. This time they were serious. Remember, you had RFK and Musk and all these characters around. So hopes were high. And he started with this huge flurry in January of executive orders. But we also got, and again, this, I thought, signaled the worst. We got this kind of quasi-imperial Trump who started, like, shit-talking about Greenland and renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America and all this sort of stuff. And I remember at the time that Ben Shapiro made a video where he was really excited, and I made a video commenting on how Ben Shapiro was super excited about these developments. And in that video, I said, remember, the reason that Ben Shapiro's excited is because it's his empire, right? It works for him. It doesn't work for you, okay? And unfortunately, that early warning sign has continued to set the tone for much of Trump's first year, to the extent where I have coined something called trumps law, which is everything he does for the likes of Ben Shapiro, which will become apparent as we go through blow by blow what happened this year. Okay. In February, and this was really the story the last time I allowed myself to get excited about a bit of Trump theater. And I thought it was, I mean, I thought it was one of the best things ever to happen at the time. As is so often the case, in retrospect, it was a massive nothing burger. As the only person who pointed that out at the time was Brian Beletic of New Atlas Forum. And I have consistently credited him with setting me right on anything around Trump, Ukraine, Russia. But what happened in February was the Oval Office stuff with Zelensky, right? And that was amazing theater. It was a great bit of pro wrestling. And the last kind of holy shit moment that Trump has given us really was the whole Oval Office, you know, thing with Zelensky. We also got in, you know, speaking of Brian Beletic, in February, Pete Hegseth gave this speech where he outlined the division of labor plan. And really, that playbook, as outlined by Hegseth, as previously outlined by a Rand corporation paper, you know, 15, 20 years ago, as Brian Beletic points out on an almost weekly basis, that basically set out the NATO strategy for what is known as the division of labor plan, where Europe is tasked with dealing with Russia and America will pivot towards China in the coming years. And despite all the Punch and Judy stuff, all the theater, all the, you know, the kayfabe argument between Trump and Starmer and Trump and the EU and all of that, it's all baloney. It's all nonsense because basically Europe is following American orders when it comes to what's happening with Russia. And if you don't believe it, go back. It's February the 8th, Pete Hegseth, the Division of Labour speech. He outlined it all then, and they have not deviated from that one iota. And at the time, the British Defence Secretary and the French one and so on, they were all just 100% on board. Subsequently, they pretend to have these disagreements and arguments, and J.D. Vance gives speeches about this, that, and the other. That's all rubbish. What's actually happening is this division of labour plan, and they have stuck to it resolutely. Around this time, coming into March, Tucker Carlson started getting a lot more vocal, and he started becoming low-key kind of Trump critical, or he's never really been critical of Trump himself, but of foreign policy establishment and some of the kind of neoconish things that the Trump admin is doing. And so he started getting more vocal around this time, which I think foreshadowed one of the great stories of the year, which we'll get on to. That all started in March. Now, you could argue, so the two other stories in March were a gearing up of the tariffs, which was really an April story, but they started gearing up for them in March, and the deportations started. On that front, I had a look. Deportations to date under Trump have been about 600,000. They're doing this thing, the Trump admin, where they're trying to argue that voluntary remigrations, that is people who've just chosen to, emigrations, I guess you'd call them, people who've chosen to leave. So they beg that up to 2.5 million. The actual number is about 600,000, which is, I did have a look, is about double the rate that Biden was doing, right? About double what Biden managed. And it was, I think, above the peak year of Obama. So in terms of that 600,000 deportations number, that's something that you could tick in the Trump scorecard. He's done a decent amount of deportations. If you wanted to get down into the weeds, as I'm sure somebody like Nick Fuentes will want to do, you could say, well, yeah, but at the same time, he's given amnesties. He's extended visas to, I think, 1.6 million. There was legal immigration of about 800,000 that came in. So many other visas were given out. So you know, once you factor that all in, that 2.5 million number they're quoting is more or less cancelled out with the number of people who came in. But value-free analysis, 600,000 is better than zero, isn't it? Also, the other thing to mention on the deportations is that they have more or less stopped the southern border crossings. So, you know, that is another plus point for Trump. So at the very least, the MAGA chuds have got some deportations, not enough, but they've got quite, you know, 600,000, better than zero, and they've had border crossings reduced. The trouble in America is that, one, Biden let in so many, I think it was 20 million people or something insane in 4 years that Biden let in. And, of course, I had a look, demographic change in the country. In 2006, the white population of America was about 66-67%. In 2016, that is when Trump first came to office back in the first Trump admin, it was 61%. Now we're down to 56-57%. That's the official numbers. I know people who think that the white population is less than that. So you could say, well, this is a good start, but in real terms, the rate of change since Trump went down the golden escalator 10 years ago hasn't actually slowed down. In fact, it accelerated slightly. The rate of change year on year was 0.55% since Trump has been involved in politics. In the Bush Obama years, it was about 0.45, so it's accelerated slightly. Much of that, though, is down to just the insane number who came in under Biden. So I wouldn't blame Trump for that. I'm just saying that 10 years of MAGA haven't really slowed the demographic change in the country that so many of his voters care about. Still, credit where it's due. 600,000 deportations, bag it up to 2.5 million if you include voluntary re-immigrations and emigrations and so on. You know, yes, there has also been legal immigration and extensions of visas and amnesties as well. So, you know, but still, I would put it as a plus in the Trump column for sure. Then, though, in April, the wheels, I would say, started coming off the MAGA train. Unfortunately, it was a good start, right? But then we got the wheels really started falling off. For me, the first story where I thought, things are looking like this is a clown show, was the tariffs and so-called Liberation Day. I remember Trump came out, he had this big, big kind of a billboard thing, sign, where he had all the tariffs and all of the different rates, and there was this formula, and I was like, hold on a second, this formula is just nonsense. This is back of an envelope nonsense. This whole thing stinks, right? People were writing essays at the time saying, this is it, it's over for globalization, it's over for globalism, the world is never going to be the same again, this is a huge FU to China, all of this stuff. Okay, I had the debate with Dan on my show, Dan from Lotus Eaters, and I was said, like, look, something's up here. This is for show. This is not going to result in the huge changes that his base want and the reindustrialization of America, which is what people want. And, well, as we, you know, the story going into May and the meme that emerged was Taco. Trump always chickens out. He walked back pretty much every single one of those tariffs, chickened out against China. You know, basically, it didn't result in the thing that was promised. It did none of the stuff that was promised, none of the stuff that was being talked about at the time. It was basically all walked back. And now people would rather forget about Liberation Day. Remember, Liberation Day was meant to be a date remembered in American history as the moment that finally we're free of the globalist men in Davos and all of that. None of that happened at all. In fact, you could argue that China have outplayed Trump comprehensively, and now in December, as I'm recording this, there are problems. There's a massive chip shortage problem in the world. Processing power. There is a shortage of it. Apparently, it's something to do with, I mean, people will correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm led to believe it's something to do with the amount of processing power that AI uses, okay? And that now the cost of processing power has gone absolutely through the roof. The price of silver has gone through the roof. Good for if you've invested in silver. Some people I know are quids in on that. But Elon Musk today is saying, well, this is bad because silver is used in all sorts of important, manufacturing processes for chips and so on. So, yeah, I mean, the Americans are the ones feeling the squeeze, not China, as many people, including me, pointed out at the time. And it comes back to one of my criticisms again and again of the Trump admin is that how much is just for show? How much is pro wrestling? And how much is them being serious? For me, the tell that all this was for show was the fact that the mathematics behind the formula was just nonsense. It was just nonsense, okay? And you don't need a degree in economics or anything like that to know that those formulas they use were nonsense, okay? And I said so at the time. And at the time, I made a video. And I said, MAGA is starting to become more unpopular. MAGA is, cratering in popularity. And, as is so often the case, people were calling me everything at the time. Now, basically, nobody disagrees. Nobody but the most ardent diehards, right, disagree that Trump has cratered in popularity. And I think the wheels really, it really was around this time. Another thing that exacerbated Trump's declining popularity was this famous shot of Trump helping Netanyahu sit down, which made him look subservient. It made him look like Netanyahu's slave. It made him look owned by Israel. And that has been an enduring theme of Trump's second term. And that would become even more the story in the second half of the year, as we'll see. I made a tweet just before Christmas, and I said, when was the moment that Trump lost his aura? And by far the most popular reply was by Daryl Cooper, my buddy Mastermaid, who simply just put this picture there. April 2025, you can mark the moment. That was the moment where a lot of people jumped off the Trump train, just this photo alone. But it came off the back of Taco. It came off the back of Trump always chickens out and the damp squib that was Liberation Day. So that's a kind of, April the 7th, if you're wondering, is the chair shot with Netanyahu. It was a bad week, that. Coming into May, and off the back of the Netanyahu shot, and of course Israel's actual actions and the ongoing debates around that, the criticism of Israel became louder. Voices like Tucker's became louder. Fuentes started his ascendancy, you could say, into becoming more dominant in the discourse, coming in from the fringes to be a much more central voice driving the conversation. And this was around the time where there was a confluence of crises for Trump. The Israel question and are you owned by Netanyahu? That was a story. The tariffs and Trump always chickens out and the taco thing really cemented itself in May, right, the month after. And to compound matters, Elon Musk quit Doge. Elon Musk quit Doge. And was saying, well, soon the world will see about Epstein. He since deleted those tweets. I don't know what's happened there. But the spectre of Epstein started looming right with Musk crashing out in May. On Doge, this was another thing that had huge promise early in the year. With Doge, he revealed a lot of things, right? Remember, we were given access to those finance maps, and it was remarkable how much stuff was just directly being funded by the US government itself, right? And I remember I wrote this speech years ago, like the octopus and the NGOs and all that. And in the end, it was just like, it's just the American government. You know, push comes to shove, it all goes back to federal funding. And Elon Musk revealed all of that. And, you know, there were these huge promises made. They were going to cut $2 trillion of waste, Doge was. They were going to make huge cuts to government staff and so on. All of it, slowly but surely, walked back. From $2 trillion, we went down to $1 trillion. From $1 trillion, we went down to a paltry $150 billion, which is a lot smaller than $2 trillion. By the end of the year, Doge was completely disbanded in November. Doge, the cuts to staff, lots of those staff were reinstated afterwards. Federal spending had actually increased from $7.2 trillion to $7.6 trillion. The national debt had increased. And to make matters even worse, a couple of months later, as Elon Musk ranted about himself, the big beautiful bill was absolutely monumentally stuffed full of pork. So Doge, the whole Doge experiment and Elon Musk's foray into frontline politics, his company's under tremendous criticism from the left, and a great personal cost to himself and to his reputation around the world. He went all in with Trump. He cheerled him all through the election, and he basically just embarrassed himself by taking on the swamp and losing. Doge was a colossal failure, unfortunately. Some people have pointed out that the only thing Doge did achieve was installing Palantir onto as audit software. So getting Palantir into all of the veins of the state as a kind of spyware thing. Yeah, okay. But in terms of what people actually wanted was taking a massive chainsaw to the deep state. Unfortunately, the deep state won. And Musk basically just flamed out and ended up looking silly. I'm not happy about it. I would have liked Musk to succeed, but it didn't happen. Instead, now Musk is a much reduced figure, retweeting libs of TikTok and cheering on Israel and saying, by Gad Sand's book and all this crap. So unfortunately, Musk, even the world's richest man, took on Leviathan and lost. In June, Tucker Carlson started to get really, really vocal about what Trump was doing. And this was really what put Fuentes on the map. Right. When I say on the map, I mean people who would not have been, it would rather have been seen dead than admit to watching Nick Fuentes just a year earlier or 6 months earlier. Now, like, actually, this kid is making a lot of sense. Actually, I agree with every single thing he said here, because Fuentes, this was the month where the 12-day war between Israel and Iran took place. If you remember, what happened there is that Israel had this plan, a decapitation strike to topple the mullahs and the ayatollah in Iran. They were aiming for regime change. Their strikes were initially successful, but then Iran had contingency plans. They rebounded. They had a new command structure in place within a couple of days. They then started to retaliate. Israel was not able to sustain the barrage that Iran hit back at them. They were starting to lose and panic. So, of course, Big Daddy America, Trump, comes to the rescue, bails out the Israelis with this bombing thing. Really, I think, again, a bit of kabuki theater. I actually think that there was more cooperation with Qatar and Iran and Israel and America to basically come out of that situation with everybody being able to save face with this bombing campaign. People will debate what was actually achieved there. But that is actually what happened. There was maybe the last ever cool Trump moment where, you know, remember he had that rant, you don't know what the F you're doing and so on. Again, clown pro wrestling politics, right? But it was a kind of semi-cool moment from Trump there. But this was the moment where a lot of the base broke, okay? Iran has been the thing that the Zionists have been completely obsessed with. Tucker broke over this. He was extremely vocal about it. Fuentes, even more so. Some of the rants he did at that time have gone down in legend now. And I would say from June onwards, the dominant story in American politics was the MAGA civil war between the Zionist faction and the non-Zionist or the anti-Zionist faction. Okay, and it all happened really around the 12-day war. Okay, so moving on into July, and things really started escalating here. The Musk crash out continued, the rants about Epstein and so on. But this now could no longer be ignored because Trump came out and he basically cussed out his entire base over Epstein. He said that people who were concerned about Epstein aren't really followers of his. It was an epic betrayal. I would argue it was a heel turn for Trump, right? If all the other things hadn't done it, the Epstein thing possibly was a bridge too far. All of these people like Alex Jones and, you know, all of the Q people and so on. Epstein had been a huge thing for MAGA, right? Trump had actively courted the conspiracy base and all of this sort of stuff. And now him coming out and saying it's a Democrat hoax and all the rest of it, nobody who cares about it is a fan of his and so on. Just appalling betrayal of his base. And it made a lot of people think, well, what's Trump hiding here? You know, compounded with the betrayal on foreign policy, you know, being the Israel stooge and the neocon and so on. And then the colossal failure of Doge, which I've already talked about. Around this time, you got, I would say, the massive rise of Nick Fuentes in July. I mean, it already started a couple of months earlier, but by this point, Fuentes clips were being shared widely on TikTok and all across social media and by Democrats, and all sorts of people were saying, this Fuentes is making a good point. Trump is an absolute traitor to his base. And then the kind of other side of the coin was Tucker Carlson, who continued to be an extremely strong voice on all of these issues. And this is all foreshadowing what would happen later in the year. But MAGA was in civil war and fractured by July 2025. And for me, who'd been critical a few months earlier, my crime is always being early, okay? I always get there a little bit before other people because I can see where things are going. I have a few little tricks to understand headlines and see, you know, I kind of see things a little bit before other people. Usually what happens is I'm cussed out for something and then it becomes like common wisdom, right? Well, at this point in July, that was basically the point where everybody else was catching up to me, even if I do say so. But if you don't believe me, the internet is there forever. The comments are there forever. And some people, some of you are honest, come back and say, yeah, sorry, AA. You were right. I freaked out. Sorry about that. Other people are less honest. And in 2026, my tolerance for dishonest people and traitors and snakes and two-faced cowards and paid shills is going to be zero. I'm taking the stone cold Steve Austin approach. Okay? Don't trust anybody. That's the bottom line. In a environment of snakes and hustlers and hucksters and charlatans, that's the stance you have to take. And I've learned a lot about who's honest and who's dishonest through all of this. So have you, hopefully. Hope you take in names, friends. So anyway, in August, the MAGA Civil War, as I'm calling it, truly exploded because now you have figures like Ted Cruz getting involved on the Zionist side, and you had figures like MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, getting involved on the anti-Zionist side and on the Epstein front. Okay, and so, and Thomas Massey as well, who's been an ongoing story, and there was an attempt by Trump to primary Massey and so on. So now you have MAGA faithful who are concerned about stopping forever wars, Zionist influence, and on the release of the Epstein files on one hand, and you've got a kind of a collection of absolute scumbags, right? Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro and Ted Cruz and all of these absolute slimeball, never Trump, disgusting swamp creatures on the other side colliding. And unfortunately, you have Trump and certain squirming loyalists online going with the Cruz side, and you have the true blue MAGA staying on the other side. So that was really what was happening in the MAGA civil war there. And some people in that moment, in the moment of truth, when it was all coming to a head, decided to try to hedge. They decided to try to weasel. They decided to try to play it down. They decided to, and those people now have been exposed forever and all time. They won't be able to walk it back now. In the moment of truth, you weren't there. That was in August. September. Things then really came to a head with the tragic assassination of Charlie Kirk. If there was a civil war in August, in September, it really went into overdrive. At the same time as that, you had the Gaza ceasefire plan and Trump seeming ever more subservient to Israel, which then continually violated the ceasefire during that. That was happening in the background. But in the foreground, there was this Charlie Kirk assassination, which pretty much dominated the news cycle in October and November. You had, as well as the rise of Fuentes and the rise of Tucker, another person who was extremely prominent in 2025 was Candace Owens and her little buddy sidekick, Ian Carroll, who really lent hard on the idea that Kirk was assassinated by Israel, or that there were question marks at the FBI. There was some conspiracy around the Kirk assassination. That was a huge narrative that also was thrown into the mix. Other people who were on that side of things, like Max Blumenthal, for example, were strong anti-Zionist voices. So all of these things are connected, right? Where people stood on the Kirk assassination, in many cases, also it was like, well, these are leading anti-Zionist voices as well. And then to really send things into maximum overdrive, October was also the month of the Tucker Carlson, Nick Fuentes interview, which basically set the tone for the rest of the year. Okay, for the rest of the year. And it's all made quite complicated by the fact that the anti-Zionist voices are not exactly aligned. So Fuentes is critical of Tucker's race colorblindness, for example, and he accuses him of being a limited hangout and all this sort of thing. He's not a fan of the Charlie Kirk assassination conspiracies and Candace Owen. He believes that they are being put there to poison the well of serious criticism of Israel and so on and so forth. Without getting into all of that complexity, really this Fuentes-Tucker interview shot the discourse into the stratosphere in ways that if you'd have told me that this would have happened just a year ago, I would have told you you were delusional. Okay, this was one of the most significant bits of political discourse to happen in quite a long time. And going on, it then produced the mother of all backlashes, all the stuff with the Heritage Foundation and Ben Shapiro and Mark Levin and all of these, they went fully mask off. Shapiro was actively calling for crackdowns on social media. Levin was boasting about cancellations. Do you remember all of this? And then in the middle of it all, in the middle of all of the Tucker Fuentes backlash, Trump turned on Marjorie Taylor Greene over the Epstein files. And then in the same breath, in one of the worst months, in the worst weeks of Trump's presidency, the single worst weeks of Trump's presidency, he then praised foreign workers. He praised foreign workers as he turned on Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think he did it on the same day. And I think a lot of MAGA fans on that day, a lot of people who were Trump loyal for a decade, had their heads in their hands and they were like, this is, it's over, guys. Okay. So, yeah, that was November, I would say, was a terrible, terrible month in the history of MAGA. There were a full civil war. I mean, it's not just Tucker and Fuentes, it's Steve Bannon, and it's Robert Barnes and the People's Pundit, and there's all sorts of voices who surprised me, to be honest, in where they've come out on this. Right, the fact that Robert Barnes is on that side, flabbergasted. I mean, I can't believe it, and it's, I've been pleasantly surprised that some people actually have principles. Right, actually have principles. But yeah, I mean, this is the story of the second half of America, of the year in American politics. And then in December, Marjorie Taylor Greene resigned. Tucker was named anti-Semite of the year. Then there was this horrendous event called America Fest, which was an absolute shit show. Ben Shapiro used the opportunity to call again for Tucker to be cancelled, and there was this huge, like, everybody was, Bannon was hitting back at the Zionists, and everybody was fighting each other on the battlegrounds of being Zionist or anti-Zionist, pretty much. And around this sort of time, I would argue that Erica Kirk, as I said in a video just a couple of weeks ago, ran out of goodwill. She did the whole routine of wiping her tears and saying, you know, it's what Charlie would have wanted. Just one too many two times. And I think a lot of people around this time got fed up of the Erica Kirk kind of circus, basically. Especially when it became obvious that she was just nakedly shilling for Israel. Which is, you know, she's just appearing on talk shows, shilling for Israel, using the memory of her dead husband, which is, you know, it's just all of it in terrible taste, terrible taste. And I don't buy the argument, as I've said before, that it's an American thing. Even by the standards of pro wrestling, right, it's in poor taste. And American wrestling is in the worst possible taste, okay? This stuff with Erica Kirk has been awful. And now Trump is on a historic low in popularity. And the reason why it matters, the reason why this historic low in popularity is different from the other times where he's been down, is because the people he's lost are his base. They're his loyalists. They're the people who are supporting Trump now are swamp scumbags, Zionists, Christian Zionists, shills of various kinds, right? It is not the true base as represented by Bannon and Marjorie Taylor Greene and all these sorts of people who, you know, are standing up for truly what is America first. So at the moment, as we go into 2026, MAGA world is in absolute chaos and civil war, and it's in a terrible place, really. And what's frustrating is that it could have all been so different. Had Trump not been so beholden to Zion, had Trump not been a traitor to his people, it could have been all so different. But instead, it's people like Levin and Shapiro setting the agenda, and it's people like Marjorie Taylor Greene resigning. So they took the populist movement, they wore it as a skin suit, and now you're being sold Ronald Reagan plus, okay, as if that was MAGA all along. It's enough to make your blood boil, but that is, unfortunately, what has happened. Can it be turned around? Well, frankly, it can. How could it be turned around? Simply, Trump turns on Netanyahu. That is Trump's get-out-of-jail-free card that will be able to turn the ship around. Simply, Trump's face turns by turning his back on disgusting Israel and the people would cheer and go wild. Because I don't care what who you are or what you say, Shapiro, Levin and friends are the heels. They are the villains in this story. And the people who are opposing them are the heroes, the good guys. And everybody knows it. That's what needs to happen. Trump, it seems, is too much of a boomer, or he's too compromised, he's too far gone, or genuinely just loves this little country with all of his heart, to the point where it has jettisoned his entire political project. Maybe the entire political project was this all along. Some people do think that. And at this point, you know, with Trump's law in full effect, I mean, he bombed Nigeria the other day for something, looked into it. Even that, even something in Nigeria was actually to do with Israel. Trump's law is ironproof. Ironclad. Anyway, that is what happened in 2025. Can things get worse in 2026? Will the wheels truly and finally come off? The midterms around the corner? I mean, one of the things that interested me is that people said, well, Marjorie Taylor Greene stepped down because the true America Firsters are getting out of Dodge, so that the midterms fall squarely on the shoulders of the neocon Zionists. The Shapiros of this world won't be able to blame the disaster on the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene. They'll have to carry it themselves. That's kind of the, because they're already trying to like circle the wagons and blame the kind of true base for electoral losses, where in actuality nobody upon nobody supports Ben Shapiro, William F. Buckley, you know, Beltway libertarian bullshit GOP forever wars neocon bollocks in 2025-2026. So the story of 2026 really will be what happens in the midterms and who will be able to craft the narrative. What I would like to see is something that we did in this country, the Zero Seats campaign, personally spearheaded by me and my friends, when we set out to destroy comprehensively the Tory party. That now needs to happen to the GOP. Trump thought he could take over the GOP. MAGA thought they could do a takeover of the GOP. Actually, the GOP shows it doesn't want to change. Actually, the GOP took over MAGA. Now MAGA need to destroy the GOP. Zero seats for the GOP, I say. Republican Party, the party of Mitch McConnell, needs to be obliterated. That's what I would like to see in 2026, but let's see. Ideally, you get somebody, a candidate rising outside of the Republican machinery, because the swamp at this point is irredeemable. It cannot be fixed. It must be destroyed from the outside. That's hopefully the next story, but let's see. Let's see what happens. All right. I'll be back tomorrow with the British version of this, where I look at you in British news. Remember, promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses. Pick it up today, and I'll catch you next time.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the Academic Agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just 3 of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.